start.
Here you go. We left off last week on Daf Samach Tes Amud Beis, and we had just we had learned the Mishnah. The Mishnah described 3 + 1 scenarios in which a Jew leaves a barrel of wine, the Jew's wine, in the possession or under the control of a non-Jew. And the question is, under what circumstances can he assume that the non-Jew didn't somehow get into this, what appears to be a sealed barrel, touch the wine, and then reseal the barrel? And there was a machlokas, the Tanna Kamma, and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The Tanna Kamma said that the concern is that someone's going to actually make a hole. Ad she yishtom, make that hole, the yishtom, and then seal it up, the yigov, and it will dry. And Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel said, no, that's a, you actually, the guy has to have control for a greater amount of time, because he's not going to go and make a hole in the barrel. We'll explain why in a moment. That's what we're up to in the Gemara. Instead, it has to be enough for him to cut the lid off the top of the barrel, make a new lid, and then to seal it for it to dry. Achiyiftach v'yigof v'sigof. I don't know if I left that a verb somewhere in there.
How does he get, what's the mechanism? What does the guy actually do to turn the wine into Yain Nesach? What does he actually do?
He touches it. That's if it works. Concerned with Maga. Doesn't have to pour it. Maga, all along we've assumed, if a guy touches the wine directly, you know, without a barrier, that's sufficient to make it Yain Nesach. So the Gemara had three cases, in all of which the halacha was that you're allowed to leave him a certain amount of time if you don't tell him that you're going to be gone. But if you tell him you're going to be gone, then if you tell him you're going for a haircut. So under those circumstances, he knows, okay, well, how long does it take to get a haircut at Chubby's barbershop? And based upon that answer, if there's enough time for him either to make a hole in the barrel, seal it for it to dry, or to cut the top off the barrel, make a new lid, seal it, and for it to dry. So if there's enough time, then the ayin is aser, and if not, the ayin is mutter. But if you don't tell him you're going on a journey, so then the Mishnah says that the wine has to be becheskas hamishtamer, and the Gemara, we discussed that already, what that means. But the bottom line is that you have, presumably, you don't really have a time limit. The Mishnah says, even afilu kedemil, even 18 minutes, but it's not like matzah, it might actually be more than that. As long as he's afraid constantly, you're going to come back and catch him in the act, so then there's no problem with the wine. So the Gemara had to explain, first case was where you had a guy who was a porter, he was transporting your wine, then you had a case where you left it with him on a boat, another case you left it with him in a store, a chanus. And each of these cases, the Mishnah literally repeats itself verbatim, the Tanna Kamma's opinion, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion. And at the end of the Mishnah, there was a last case, which was, you're eating with him ala shulchan, that should be already strike one. What are you eating with him in the same table? But okay. And there's wine on the table, and there's wine on the sideboard, the dubaki. And you tell him, you walk out, it depends what you tell him. If you just leave him stum, then he's allowed, then you assume anything on the table, which he can reasonably say, I'm, you know, touching, moving, pouring, and so on, is going to be considered yai nesech, but anything on the sideboard, not. But if you tell him, drink to your heart's content, so then he could go to the sideboard too, and if you walk back in, he wouldn't be afraid that you would say, what are you doing? Right? Because you gave him permission. So in those cases, in these cases, the Mishnah then said, that's the din. And then the Mishnah says that if there are barrels that are open, they are asuros, meaning in a case where he could have gone and thought, let's say you told him, have a mosaic b'shosa, drink to your heart's content. But if they are sealed barrels, so then the Mishnah says, the shear is kadesh yiftach v'yigov v'sigov. Enough time to take the top off the barrel, make a new lid, and seal it. Now you'll notice, and the Gemara is going to comment on it, that is only one opinion recorded, and it's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which, as we will see in a few minutes, is going to be the proof for Rava that we paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in all the cases. The last thing we just read in the Gemara last week, though, the final piece we read, was at the two dots on Samathesamadej near the top, starting with Utsricha. The Gemara explains, why do you need all of these cases in the Mishnah? In other words, we're not that stupid. You could tell us one of these cases, and we will infer the exact same Achlokas Tanakam and Rav Shmuel Leo when it comes to the other two cases. So the Gemara explained why, A, if you only told you A, I wouldn't know B. If I only told you B, you wouldn't know C. That's why we tell you A, B, and C. And that's where we left it in the Gemara. And now we're on what is about the 10th line, 11th line, Amar Rabba Bar Chana, right after the words Kamash Malon, right after the abbreviation. So Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Machlokes B'shel Sid, Abel B'shel Tit, Divrei HaKol Kedei SheYiftach V'Yigof V'Yigof. So Rabba Bar Chana relates a tradition in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that the entire machlokas is only when you're dealing with sid, when you're dealing with a lid that's made of plaster. But if you're dealing with a lid that's made of, fire of clay, of tit, so then everybody agrees that you need to, in order for it to be a problem, there has to be enough time that he could basically cut off the lid, make a new lid, and then when he seals it, for that seal to dry. What is the difference between these two? So Rashi explains that when you deal with a barrel of sid, I don't work with any of these materials, so I'm going to trust Rashi, and that probably is pshat in the Gemara. When you deal with a barrel of sid, and you seal up the hole, you make a hole, and you seal it up. So apparently, it dries relatively quickly on top, and therefore it's possible that someone can make a hole, seal it, and with a little bit of time for it to dry, you're not actually going to notice that somebody made a hole there, right? Because that would be the tip-off. The catch with a plaster lid is that even if you can make it look smooth on the top, you can't do it underneath. Remember, the guy, the issue here is he has a barrel, the top or the lid of the barrel is on. According to the Tanakhama, the concern is not that he's going to break the lid of the barrel off, because there's not enough time for that. Instead, he's going to make a hole, and then he's going to seal the hole. So Rabbi Yochanan claims that the only time that there's a machlokas is when it comes to tit. When it comes to tit, so there isn't enough time typically. It takes a long time for the tit to dry in such a way that you can't actually tell. Now, the question, of course, then is, what is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's position? Why, when it comes to seed, why is it that he's not concerned that the guy made a hole and then sealed the hole and there was enough time for it to dry? So to that, the Gemara, you'll see, and the Gemara continues, is that even though you can seal the top, you can't seal what's under. In other words, it's sealed, but you can't smooth out and make even the inside of the lid. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says that when the Jew will take off the lid, he would see the underside of the lid and realize, somebody made a hole here and sealed it up, and I couldn't tell from the outside. And apparently, Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel assumes that people, when they take the lid off the barrel, they look at the inside of the lid. And the Tanakhama assumes that people aren't necessarily going to look at the inside of the lid. And hence, what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is that the machlokas is specifically in a case of seed, where you can tell from the outside, but you can't tell from the outside, but you can tell from the inside. And the question is anybody going to notice? The owner going to notice the inside of the barrel? But when it comes to teeth, Sir Rabbi Yochanan says you can see even from the outside for a very long time, and therefore the guy is not going to make a hole in the barrel, and therefore everybody would agree that the shear that you have to be worried about that the guy went into the barrel is if the guy knew that he had enough time to cut the lid off, make a new lid, put it on and seal it. And under those circumstances, then everybody agrees it's a problem. Yes.
According to Tanakhama, the non-Jew knows that people check lids, and so therefore he's not going to make a hole.
He's afraid. He's afraid that somebody might check the lid. Yeah.
Okay. So my focus is really in what he's thinking, right?
Correct. The entire issue, in the entire sugya, the whole question is, what is the guy thinking? It has nothing to do with reality. You could take a trip to the moon, but if the guy thinks that you're on the other side of the door about to walk in, you could be gone for 3 days, and still, until we assume that the guy is going to figure, he's not coming back anytime soon. But it's all what's going through the guy's head.
So it could be that, really, everybody agrees that people do check their barrels, and the only machloket is, whether or not he thinks that people check their barrels.
It could, but I suspect that it's more likely. My guess is the following. In reality is that sometimes people notice the inside of the barrel, sometimes they don't. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel thinks that the guy is sufficiently afraid that the owner's going to notice the inside of the barrel. Maybe especially since he left it in possession of the guy. Maybe more of that. And the Tanna Kamma thinks, nah, people just follow their habit. And the guy assumes that, yeah, he's going to take the lid off, but once he's not going to pay attention to the lid. So, but it falls somewhere. It is certainly what is the guy thinking?
Did you discuss what is motivating the guy?
Yes. Well, we didn't discuss it. We've discussed it in the past. There is this assumption. It's worth restating the point. The goyim, generally speaking, do not walk around thinking, "How am I going to be machshel the Jew?" When the Jew's food is uncovered, he walks around with his thing of chazer schmaltz to throw a few drops in. That's not what the Gemara assumes anywhere about non-Jews. The assumption, generally speaking, halacha, is that a guy will not introduce non-kosher product into food unless it's financially beneficial to him, or because that's the way it's just normally made. But if it's not normally made that way, it's not normally one of the ingredients, it's not normally made in a pot that's used for something inappropriate, there's no financial benefit to the guy, we don't assume that he's going to do anything. There's one thing that the Gemara assumes, that goyim are luhutim achar. They are passionate and driven for. And is that if you put them in the presence of wine, they're going to libate it to their God. That's what seems to work throughout the Masechta. Nothing else, just yayin. Today, people, you would think they're going to go and drink your wine. But once upon a time, they're going to touch your wine and libate it to their God. So the assumption is the goy has the opportunity. We are afraid that he is going to do it. But it's only if he thinks he has the opportunity. How much of this is also, remember, there are two parts to the Gzera. There's Avodah Zarah and this Chasnus. Right? So this should not be, you know, this is a concern of Avodah Zarah. This is a concern of Avodah Zarah. Isaac?
Does it apply only to wine? Would it apply, for example, to maple syrup? Where years ago, where the kids had a farm in Vermont, and what they do is when they collect the maple syrup, they put a congealment or something that congeals, made out of fat.
The precipitating agent, right?
I don't know what it is, but it clarifies it.
Yeah.
So the question is, I mean, whoever thought of it? Maple has 100% maple syrup, you know. So would it apply to something that has the same application, like a maple syrup or something else?
So
or
you
purely
just
wine? Because of nesach involved. There's no nesach.
No, but that's a case where if they do it, they do it because that's the way it's made. You're just not aware. You're just not aware that that's the way it's made. But the fact is, if you were to go to people in the industry and say, how do they get maple syrup? What do they do in the process? And they would say, oh, yes. First, we collect it from the tree. Then we typically put a precipitating agent in order to clarify the cause, whatever, to fall out and so on. And we typically use products A, B, C, D, E, F, and G, right? Those are the typical products used. So it's just the fact that you're discovering that means because you don't know or I don't know enough about maple syrup processing. But that's the way it's normally made. In the same way that when they talk about morios, which is some kind of brine, being usser, morios shogayim, the concern is that he puts wine in it. Now, he doesn't put wine in it because, he wants to libate to his God. He puts wine in it because it's an ingredient that does something. It helps something in some way, making the morios more palatable and so on. So that's a separate issue. We're not, the issue, that's a question of having knowledge of the kashrus industry. You know, 60 years ago, or more, people in this country used to eat by reading the ingredients. Now, I'm not arguing that you can or can't do that now, but the argument against doing that now is that food processing has become much more complicated with many more agents and many more things used in the processing of food, and therefore what was made in a very simple way 60 years ago might be made with stuff today that we might say you probably wouldn't want to eat it, leaving aside halachic reasons, you know, the other reason to think that maybe we shouldn't be eating it. But bottom line is that the nature of the processing has changed. That's a question of simply being knowledgeable in the food production industry, how food is manufactured, actually how food is processed. But that's not about, the assumption is not when, you know, there might be a problem with a particular ingredient used to process X, apple juice, right? Apple juice also has something where they try to have an agent that causes the cloudy stuff, the impurity stuff sort of fall out or, you know, sink. So they're not doing that. If they happen to use some agent that happens to have some tarfus in it, they're not doing it to be machshalas. They're doing it just because that's what they use. They don't really, it might be the most efficient way of doing it or the best ingredient or the cheapest ingredient. But that's just totally different than everything that we are doing here. This is all about the guy's opportunity to give a gift to his God. That's all it is. Okay. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan said. He said that the homach locus is only by a magufa or a chavis shell seed, not by a chavis shell teat. Okay, so now the Gemara asks a question. Meisive, Aman Rabban Shimon Gamliel HaChamim. This is recording a conversation, a dialogue between Rashbag, Rabban Shimon Gamliel, and the Tanakama. And it's based upon the dialogue the Gemara is going to infer what were they arguing about. Right? You step into the middle of an argument and between two people, so the first thing that you're doing is you're listening carefully. We do this automatically to figure out, you came in the middle, so you're trying to figure out, based upon the shock levitaria, the back and forth, what is the original argument about? So that's what the Gemara is going to do here. So in this, Rabban Shimon Gamliel says to the Tanakama, Valo Shitumo Nikar Bein Melmala Bein Melmata. He said to them, what do you mean? How can you be Matir? After all, the whole is recognizable both on top and on the bottom. Presumably on the top and the bottom of the lid. Now I would stop right here and ask you the following question. Based upon this one snippet of dialogue, what kind of barrel are they arguing about? Tit or Sid? Has to be tit, right? Because by sid, it's not nikar lamala, it's only nikar lamata. It's only when you open, you can smooth it out on top, and it dries quickly, and you don't notice it. It's only on the bottom, because you couldn't smooth it out there, that it's going to be uneven and obvious. So if Rabbi Shmuel says to the Chachamim, ha lo shetumo nikar, bein lamala bein lamata, presumably what he heard was the Chachamim say that it's asur, even on the shorter shear, when you're dealing with sid. Which is when you're dealing with tit. So how could Rabbi Yochanan say that even the Chachamim agree by tit, you need a longer shear of time? So that's what the Gemara explains. What was the question? The Iyamris Bishlama Bishel Tit Machlokes, if they're arguing by a case of the clay, Hainu Diktanis Shetumo Nikar Beimel Mala Beimel Mata. That makes sense that Rabbi Shimon Leo would say to them, what do you mean? Why are you so frum about this? Why are you so concerned? After all, you're going to be able to tell. The guy's going to be afraid to do it. Ela'i amris bishel sid machlokes. If they were arguing about only sid, so bishlama lamata yediyah, yes, underneath, when you open up, they'll take the lid off. When you get able to see. But ela lamala halo yediyah. There's no way to, it's not known, it's not knowable to looking from the top. So don't you see from this little snippet of the Brisa that Rabban Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim argue at least when it comes to Shel Sid. I don't know what their position is by Shel Tit, but they certainly argue by Shel Sid. So the Gemara says, no. Rabban Shimon Gamliel, hu de lo yada mai ka'ami Rabbanon. Rabban Shimon Gamliel wasn't sure what the Tanakama's position is. He heard the Tanakama say, and for truth, if you look in the Mishnah doesn't say what material we're dealing with it. It just says, talking about barrels. So he wasn't sure what they were, what their position was. Vahachi ka'amar lehu, ibishel tit ka'amriso. If you're being machmir by a bal of tit, shitumo nikar beimel mala beimel mata. What is your concern? And v'i bishel sid ka'amriso. Even if you're only arguing when it comes to a case of sid, nihida lamala lo yidia. True, you can't tell from the outside of the barrel, but lamata mia yidia. But at least, why are you worried about the guy doing anything? He's going to be afraid that the Jew is going to open the barrel and say, strange. It looks like somebody made a hole. So in other words, Rabban Shimon Gamliel wasn't sure what they were arguing about. So we're only seeing half of the argument. He said, listen, I'm not sure what the case you're dealing with is, but in one case you can tell both sides, in one case you can tell one side. But it doesn't mean that the Chachamim necessarily were arguing by Shel Sid. Rabbi Shimon himself just wasn't sure what their position was. And what is the Rabbanan's position? Rabbanan, assuming that they only argue by Shel Tit, Rabbanan kevan de lamala lo yedia lo masik adaite de apich v'chazile. So it's interesting here, Gabe, in response to your question, the Gemara says lo yedia, lo masik adaite. He is not male on his da'as, the apich V'chazileh. It sounds like that the Jew will turn it over and see it. It sounds like it is obvious. It has to be the guy. The guy doesn't think, the Jew might see the inside of the lid. And therefore, the Rabbanon say, if it's a material that you can't tell on the outside, we're not concerned that the guy is going to think that the Jew is going to open it and turn it over and look at it. Inami, alternatively, zimnin dechalim. Sometimes, when you fill in the hole, it actually works out anyway that it's smooth on the bottom and it dries. And therefore, the guy thinks that, listen, you know, even on the chance that the Jew might look at the inside of the barrel, it's like he's a lamdan, the guy. It's a sveika. Maybe the Jew won't look at the underside of the barrel. And even if he does, maybe it'll come out perfectly. Okay. If I were a betting man, I wouldn't bet on that last one, but okay. Fine. So that's how the Gemara allows Rabbi Yochanan's statement to stand, that the machlokes of the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is limited to a barrel made of sid, not a barrel made of tit. But a barrel made of tit would require a much longer time to dry, and hence the Chachamim would agree to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel that you would use the shear of beheading the barrel, or removing the lid from the barrel. It sounds like when you remove the lid, you're going to break it, and therefore he has to make a new lid, and then wait for that the seal around it and everything to dry, and then that would be the shear, according to everybody. Okay. Now, Amar Rava, Halacha k'Rabban Shimon Gamliel, Hoil v'tanan stama k'vasei. Rava says that we paskin like Rabban Shimon Gamliel because the Stam Mishnah, meaning the last part of the Mishnah, that fourth case of Haya Ochal Imo Ala Shulchan, is a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, because it only records his opinion. It only records Kadesh Yiftach V'Yigov V'Sigov. So the Gemara says, and quotes the Tanan, Haya Ochal Imo Ala Shulchan, V'Hiniach Lagin Ala Shulchan, Lagin Ala Hadulbaki, V'Hiniach V'Yatza, Mashal Ala Shulchan, Asa Mashal Dabaki, Motor, V'im Amar Lo, Have a Mizog, Mizog, V'Shose, Mosaic V'Shose, Avsha Ala Hadulbaki, Asa, Chamias, Psuchos, Asuras, Stumos, Mitaros, Kidei, She Yiftach, V'Yigov, Visigo. That's the key line. That's only Rabbi Shimon Gamaliel's position, nobody else's, and not the Tanakamas, therefore it's a Stam Mishnah. So now, of course, you can't win. The Gemara says, Peshitta. Okay, so why, Rabbi, did you have to tell us this? We know Halacha is Stam Mishnah. Halacha is not always like the Stam Mishnah. The Amora, I believe, who was responsible for saying that we paskin like Stam Mishnais is Rabbi Yochanan. But there are a few places in Shas where the Gemara quotes Rabbi Yochanan as saying Halach is always Kistam Mishnah, and then the Gemara will quote a stira that Rabbi Yochanan paskin differently or something, and they'll say it's Trey Amorayv Alibad Rabbi Yochanan. It was a machlokus what Rabbi Yochanan said. So it appears as a machlokus where Rabbi Yochanan really held such a steadfast rule that Halacha always follows the Stam Mishnah, the Mishnah that anonymously encodes a particular opinion. Okay, but we generally assume most of the time, as a rule of thumb, if that's a sufficient number of qualifiers, that halacha is like a Stam Mishnah. Okay. Problem, of course, comes when you have two Stam Mishnahs that contradict one another. Right. There are all these sorts of interesting rules, because the Gemara, or when you have one Stam, the Gemara has the following principle. If you have a Stam Mishnah followed by a Machlokas, meaning one Mishnah was taught first, then the other Mishnah was taught with the Machlokas, we don't paskin like the Stam, necessarily. Because it means that Rebbe, when he taught the Mishnayos, first he made the Stam Mishnah, which suggested that he held according to that opinion. And then when he taught the Machlokas subsequently, it means he changed his mind. He wasn't sure the Halacha was like the Stam Mishnah. The problem, of course, is chronologically knowing what Masechta Rebbe taught first. And what, if within one Masechta, then it's clear we know which came first. And if you're dealing with two Masechtas, it's clear the Gemara says we don't know which came first. The only Machlokas is about the Bavas. Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra. It's Machlokas Amorayim, whether it's one Masechta or whether it's three different Masechtas. If it's one Masechta, then if you find the Stam Mishnah in Bava Metzia and you find a Machlokas in Bava Basra, then you would say it's a Stam V'Yachar Kach Machlokas. So anyway,
I never went back and edited.
That is the assumption that the Gemara works with. It's an assumption that is assumed in other contexts as well. There's a phrase the Gemara uses a few places in Shas that I feel with the beginning is Rebbe did something, Mishnah lo zazam im koma. In other words, the original line in Mishnah, in some cases, it may be that Rebbe changed his mind and he disagreed with it. There's one case in Yevamos where he taught A, and then he taught even a bigger Chiddush B. And if you didn't have B and you just had A, you would have said A is the limit. It's not explicit. But he went even further and said B, but the original Mishnah is Zazim and Koma. So there's no contradiction. It's a lesser Chiddush, bigger Chiddush, right? But he could have taken the lesser Chiddush out of the Mishnah.
The original was included in the second.
Correct.
That's much difference in it, right?
You correct. But I believe that there are cases where we say, I mean, we have some, if you want to look at the, I think it's the second to last Mishnah in Perek HaLabasa, the eighth Perek in Chulin. The last Mishnah has nothing to do with really Basar v'chalav anymore, but it's the last, it's, I think on Kofte Zayin, and it's a major issue when it comes to cheese making. And you can see the Mishnah is an amalgamation of Mishnah Rishona, and then, but it's not identified as such, and then later in the Mishnah, you get a din that really contradicts the first half if you read carefully, and one of the ways that MRO explained is that was the Mishnah Rishona. But that means that they never took it out once it was in the Mishnah. Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara goes a step further and says, Pshita, why does Rava have to tell us halacha is like Rav Shmuel? We know it's a Stam Mishnah. What's the problem? So the Gemara says, you would have said, I don't think this is so compelling, that from the third case where the Gemara says, where the Mishnah says, excuse me, Hameniach Ove Kochavim Bachanus, even though you yotzei v'nichnas it's motor, but you let him know you're going a distance. Kadesh yishtol miyistol miyigov. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer kadesh yiftach hasachaves v'yigov v'sigov. Now that line occurred in the previous two parts of the Mishnah as well, and then we began a new topic. But you would have said here, Haya ochal al shulchan v'hiniyah ima al shulchan v'hiniyach laginim al shulchan etc. kadesh yiftach v'yigov v'sigov. You would say that was all part of Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel's statement. In other words, you had case A, Tanakama Rashbag. Case B, Tanakam Rashbag. Case C, Tanakam Rashbag, and Rashbag went off on a whole long tirade, gave another case, and told us just as then. And you would have assumed, therefore, that it wasn't the Stam Mishnah, it was just the continuation of Rashim Gamaliel's opinion. Okay. I wouldn't have read it that way, but okay. But then there are Gedolim and Tovim and many. So the Gemara doesn't need that strong of an answer. Okay, Rav is just pointing out to you that it's a Stam, beware of the Stam Mishnah at the end. It's like Rashbag, move on. But okay, the Gemara felt it was Akasha, so they give it Teretz. Yes, Gabe.
So
I spoke about this a little bit last week. As far as I know, the only hard data that you have to ask a better question: who split up the prakim? There are cases in Shas where, I don't remember where you have Bavli Mesechtes, but there are certainly cases I know in Taras where it's clear that the Perek break is put in a funny place. It should have been shifted. There are a couple of places in Shas, not too many. There's one in Bava Metzia where I think Rava is talking and he says, we were learning in front of so-and-so, Upirkon Hamafkid Hava. Our Perek was Hamafkid, which suggests that there were chapter divisions, at least by the time, no later than the fourth generation of Hamoraim in Bavel. We don't know how much early. We don't know for sure that those Perek divisions adhere exactly to ours, although Hamafkid is a Perek. It's a famous Perek in Bava Metzia. So by that time, at least, it's fair to assume the chapter divisions were in place, and I would probably bet they're more or less what we have. You know, maybe there's a slight variance that's happened since, but basically, I would guess. Mishnah divisions, I'm not sure that they mean anything. The Mishnayos, as are printed in the Gemara, and this is what I mentioned last week, because there's an odd comment to the Ran here. The Ram assumes these were all separate Mishnayos. And it sounds like he had them separate in his manuscript, but once he was dealing with one, he dealt with the others. That's the way he presented. So it sounds like he had them as separate. But I mentioned last week that at some point the Mishnayos were removed from the Gemara. If you go to almost every Ksaviyat of the Gemara that we have, there are no Mishnayos in it. Even the one manuscript, the Munich 95 manuscript that has it in the margins, not interspersed in the Gemara. All you have in the Gemara are the little Piskaot, those little one-liners. That's the only remnant, actually, of the Babylonian Mishnayos. The Mishnayos that we have is a general rule from the manuscripts and then